This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt and Patrick here. Hey, Patrick, how are you, my friend?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm heartbroken, though. I've got to admit, Mike Lindell is no longer allowed on Twitter.
Oh, no.
I don't know how I'm going to fulfill my nights. It was like every day. I'd get home from work, I'd get, you know, the show posted and have a little dinner, and then we'd scamper on down to the iMac and all pull up Twitter and just pull up Mike Lindell's Twitter feed, and that was our enjoyment for every evening with Mike Lindell. What's Mike Lindell up to? I don't know. Let's see what's on Twitter. Now that's gone. The CEO of MyPillow and a staunch supporter of Trump and his unproven claims of election fraud had his account permanently suspended by Twitter on Monday, according to multiple reports. A company spokesman tells NBC News Lindell was suspended due to repeated violations of its civic integrity policy, which, once again, before we give Twitter too much credit, they only found that policy right at the end of the Trump campaign, so the Trump presidency. So I'm going to guess especially if he decides to run for governor, he will try somehow to get a new Twitter feed. He'll try to get a new Twitter account, and probably they'll allow him on as long as he doesn't go down this. I don't know. I mean, this Dominion stuff is – they don't have evidence that they made the cardinal mistake. You know, when you listen to like Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and the claims that Mike Lindell have been making about Dominion – They make a cardinal mistake, which is you start believing your own press that you are making up yourself. And, you know, one of their main arguments is that you can't trust Dominion because, oh, it was designed by Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, so henceforth there. Actually, it wasn't. It was designed in Toronto to deal with blind voters, I think it was. That were trying to vote. That's that was where the software originated from. And so there's a lot of claims they have made, which, you know, like I said, I want them. If Dominion really does want to do this right, take them to court. Do not allow them to settle out of court. Take them to court and make them go up on the trial and explain how they took Parler memes and ran with them. I mean, that's where it's at. Now, I have said to Mike Lindell, you know, considering Dominion is suing people, if you've got legitimate evidence that Dominion has indeed done this, then you need to call a press conference and go to the Kinko's and get the big card, you know, the big board printouts of all the evidence they have and start pointing to this stuff and saying, I got this here, I got this here, I got this here. Because if you don't, then I would also call that same press conference, but instead of the big Kinko banners behind you, what I would do is say, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I made it up. I apologize profusely. I'm so sorry. And just throw yourself on the mercy of Dominion. I think they probably let you go. Honestly, if you did it that way, and I'm talking blubbering, I am talking slobber, tears. I'm so sorry. If that's what it came down to, if you were just making this up and you don't have the actual evidence, you're going to need to get to that kind of level of groveling to get off the hook with Dominion. I'm just going to let it be known. That all being said, he might actually, because if the Daily Mail did indeed, I'm seeing more that this Daily Mail might have just made up the story about him and Jane Krakowski. And if they did, well, you know, like I said, he might lose the MyPillow factory, but he's going to gain himself a fairly substantial media network. So we'll have to see where he goes. I can tell you right now, if Mike Lindell does run, and this is no joke, he will win the primary just because the people that decide the Republican nominee in the state especially on a statewide race, are Trump's most ardent fans, the people that honestly do believe that Donald Trump was robbed and that they basically – that's you know, where they're at. So, you know, 100%, he will win that nomination if he runs. I know Gazelka – clearly Gazelka wants to run. He's trying to install himself as the count or the duke or the princess or whatever he's trying to be right now, with especially his shenanigans with Tim Walz's commissioners, trying to threaten them into doing what he wants. But the reality is that Matt Burke, I mean, we've talked about the former Minnesota Viking, who is a lot of people. I mean, the Republicans, I think. There's a lot of Republicans I've talked to who are like, they kind of hope he does, but he clearly does not have a lot of political experience, and that's a little bit of concern. But, you know, there's a lot of white guys in the suburbs who is like, you know, sure, Governor Walz got us through the pandemic pretty as good as he possibly could, but Matt Burke played football, Viking football. Hey, you think I'm crazy? Tommy Tuberville. Go down to Alabama where that guy, that dude is as dumb as a brick.
But Matt Burke went to Harvard.
But Harvard, he does have a degree there. But, you know, just because you go to Harvard and you run a Catholic school and you basically hit a bunch of guys wearing pads for many years – doesn't mean you might be qualified. Didn't we learn this from Jesse Ventura? Because I think we learned this from Jesse Ventura, that you might just not be 100% qualified to be the governor of the state of Minnesota. Although I will say this, regardless, Democrats, just be prepared. Be prepared if it's Lundell or anyone else, of a mysterious third party candidate that's going to be running. Probably, you know, that's trying to take away an independent, you know, maybe they'll try to get Bach or Tomasini to run and say, hey, you know, I'm running for governor just to, because I can't take these guys anymore. And if that's the case, then the fix was in with those two. If one of those guys decides to run for governor, the fix is in. But we'll have to see. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick Cooligan is going to be joining us, Minnesota reformer. Brett's going to be talking to him coming up in a little bit. But I wanted to – the breaking news. And I got to tell you, this is unbelievably disturbing. On the 6th of January, Donald Trump sent and once again, it's not just the fact that Donald Trump spoke at this rally. It's the fact that for months beforehand, he was inciting anger and a drive to basically overthrow the election at any cost. It's pretty clear now the rally itself was coordinated via Trump. The money, the people that basically put this thing on clearly had money coming from the Trump organization, as well as also, you know, it sounds like a lot of people that were former Trump allies were involved in the planning. This was a Trump rally. The messaging the entire time was, go get them. The people that were there seemed to have been told, prepare yourself for battle and bring guns and bring weapons and bring, you know, stuff to gallows to hang the vice president, bring, you know, hand ties to take hostages. People, you know, Donald Trump pointed to the Capitol, said, go get them. I'm not going to go with you. I'll be with you in spirit, but go get them. And he did. He incited a riot. And when those people were in the Capitol, not only were they saying, hang Mike Pence, not only were they there to kill Nancy Pelosi, not only were they there to kill AOC or any Democrat and or Republican they would have gotten their hands on. They didn't care. That was an angry mob looking for blood. And we are damn lucky we do not have a congressperson or a congressional aide that was hung on outside the building itself, because I think those people, that's what they were looking to do. But we did have what ended up being two police officers killed, one killed that day, then they're killed a little bit later on. Four of the protesters died. One guy tasered himself in the crotch and gave himself a heart attack. There's a lot of ways I want to go. That's not one of them. That's not one of the ways I want to go. They tried to overthrow the election. They tried to kill politicians. They tried at the very least to get the Electoral College votes and force the elected officials to install Trump as their, you know, God Emperor over all. They not only had, they also had clearly inside information. I mean, we talked about the Washington Post story, and I talked about this yesterday, where they are being told in real time, they're all down in the basement, seal it off, turn on the gas. That tells me someone, whether it was a congressperson or a senator themselves or one of their aides, was actively helping the rioters. This was not just a bunch of angry mob people. This was a coordinated attack on our country. They violated the Capitol building, tried to overthrow government itself and democracy itself. And you'd say to yourself, my God, we should probably hold these people accountable. Well, today, Rand Paul decided to basically show the world that the Republican Party is terrified of the terrorists and the traitors that they themselves have embraced. They rallied on Tuesday against trying former Trump, President Trump, for incitement of insurrection, with only five members of party joining Democrats voting to go ahead with the impeachment trial for the role stirring up the mob that attacked the Capitol. Now, there is two things here. One is, it is damn depressing that 45 Republicans watched that happen. If any of those 45 Republicans were caught, they would have been killed, outside of maybe Hawley and Ted Cruz themselves, maybe Rand Paul. But the rest of them, even Republicans, would have been killed by this mob. Would have been killed by this mob. So it's damn disappointing that, hey, well, sure, they tried to kill me and all, but come on, I don't think we should hold them accountable. Even though many Republicans themselves in 2019 were saying that they still could impeach President Obama, even though he was out of office and really could not run for president again, had no intention of trying to run for office again from everything I've seen. They were all giddily hoping that they could impeach Obama in 2019. Now they're saying, oh, he's out of office, you can't touch him. Oh, okay. Once again, moving the goalposts. But on the positive side, this is going to be this. I'm going to presume they've got evidence against Donald Trump. And they're going to prosecute this case against Donald Trump. And they're going to bring the evidence. And right now, they don't have – and reminder, the senators don't get to come up there until the very end and all the evidence is presented and say yay or nay. So the last thing – what they're really trying to do is they're – right now, they're you're going to see all the Republicans head on to national TV tonight and say, see, they don't have the votes. Why are we wasting our time? Let's get to pandemic. They're just wasting their time. The reality is they're terrified of the trial itself. And that if the Democrats get in there and do indeed present copious amounts of evidence that Trump was indeed behind the riot, then they are stuck in a really tough position where they have to come on out. And even though, and we'll all see it, it will be televised, that we all know the truth, that they have to go on the record. But it's the delusional nature of this. How in the world do you get to a point where you are quite literally this broken as a person, that you Trump sent the mob to kill you people, and you voted to basically let him off the hook? There is no way on the planet that those same Republicans would have voted to let a Democrat off the hook under the same exact situation. And I can tell you this right now, a good chunk of the Democrats would have gone along. I'm not going to say all Democrats, because there are some people that if a Democratic president incited a riot and tried to overthrow the Capitol, there are a few Democrats that would go along with it probably. But the reality is most Democrats would go along with the impeachment as well. The sadness is that these people don't look at the crime, and Trump was right. He could gun someone down in the middle of the street, and these guys would all come on out and say, gee willikers, you know, I don't believe in murder at all. I don't believe murdering people is a good thing. But, you know, the guy was kind of asking for it. And, you know, I'm not really going to cry too many tears for that guy, even though he didn't do anything really wrong. I'm not going to. I think we just got to let bygones be bygones. And that's the reality of it. It's sad. It is absolutely sad that that's where these people are at. But I've got another story which blows my mind at how delusional and partisan the Republican Party has gotten to a point where even loved ones seem to be getting served up for ideology. I will explain this in a second, and I'm going to ask a question, which is a hard question to ask, but I'm going to ask this question of Jennifer Carnahan, the head of the Minnesota GOP, when I do return. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I should mention that yesterday we had basically the same exact thing happen in the Minnesota House. And just as disturbing, there was a Minnesota House resolution. Whereas on January 6, 2021, an armed mob breached the United States Capitol, endangering the safety of members of Congress, law enforcement, and staff. And whereas the mob damaged property in the United States Capitol, forced members of Congress to evacuate, many wearing gas masks. And whereas Capitol Police Officer Brian D. Sicknick was killed. And whereas members of the mob breached and attempted to breach the chambers of the United States Senate and United States House of Representatives minutes after members of Congress evacuated, and whereas pursuant to the 12th Amendment to the United States Constitution, the United States Congress was gathering in joint session to certify the Electoral College results, and whereas the Electoral College has cast 306 Electoral College votes for Joe Biden and 232 Electoral College votes for President Trump, and whereas the election ballots had been physically carried out of the chamber to prevent them from being damaged by the mob, and whereas Minnesota's electoral votes had not yet been certified when Congress was forced to flee, and whereas efforts to thwart the will of Minnesota voters are undemocratic, and whereas attempts to block certification of Minnesota's election results have been rejected by courts, and whereas precautionary measures were required for the Minnesota State Capitol, including mobilizing of law enforcement, now therefore be it resolved by the House of Representatives of the state of Minnesota that is unequivocally condemns violence directed at the United States Capitol and state capitals. Be it further resolved that those who participated in the criminal destruction of property and the assaults on our law enforcement officials at the United States Capitol should be arrested and prosecuted. Be it further resolved that the House of Representatives on the state of Minnesota stands behind the will of the Minnesota voters and supports the full certification of Electoral College votes by the United States Congress. Be it further resolved that the House of Representatives of the state of Minnesota condemns attacks on our democracy. Be it further resolved that the House of Representatives in the state of Minnesota reaffirms our commitment to democracy, free and fair elections, and the rule of law. So, boy, this is a kind of a no-brainer. This is what you call an easy little shot there, just a quick little layup, and easy. Of course the Republicans, many Republicans protested this. I'm going to look here. So here are the Republicans that voted no, not to condemn the attempted overthrow of democracy, not to condemn the police officer getting killed by the mob, not to condemn the threat to democracy, not to call for these people to be arrested. These people actually said, nope, that's all good with us. Backer, and you can say, oh, that's not what I meant. I just think this was a political. No. You had a chance to do the easy thing. Own your vote. The people that voted against it, Backer, Barr, Cal Barr, wow. Draz, yep, he's there. Green, Grossel, Heinrich, Mortensen, that's that chowder head down in Shakopee, dear Lord. And also it sounds like Meekland, M-E-K-E-L-A-N, also voted to stay on the side of the terrorist traitors who tried to overthrow democracy. I guess that, you know, that's one way to look at it. But the real cowards, not just those eight people who voted. Not only those guys cowards, but the real cowards are the brave Republicans who decided to not vote. When once again, the easiest of layups, condemning the violence that happened at the U.S. Capitol, condemning the terrorists who attacked us, calling for prosecution, calling for accountability in the death of a Capitol police officer, and calling for a respect to be returned as democracy must be saved. These 14 chowderheads, Albright, Bo, Erickson, Franson, Gruenhagen, Kosnick, Lucero, McDonnell, Miller, Mueller, Munson, Nash, Quam, and Scott, refuse to even vote yay or nay. Hey, I disagree with the guys who voted not to condemn, but at least they had a little bit of commitment to their stance to where they went on the record. You cowards, you ultimate 14 cowards, sat there and even Kurt Dowd voted to condemn them. Even freaking Kurt Dowd voted to condemn him. And you 14 knuckleheads, jackasses, you guys decided, oh no! We can't go on the record and condemn violence, because we will make our voters mad. But if I go on the record and vote no, then basically everyone's going to realize I'm actually cheering on the insurgents. So I won't vote at all. And don't tell me it's like I wasn't cheering on the insurgents. What are you doing voting no or not voting on this? For goodness sakes. Do you like chocolate ice cream is a more divisive argument than this. Once again, this bill condemns attacks on democracy, unequivocally condemns violence directed at the United States Capitol and state capitals, those who participated in the criminal destruction of property and assaults on our law enforcement officials will be prosecuted, stands behind the will of Minnesota voters and supports the full certification of its Electoral College votes, and reaffirms the commitment to democracy and free and fair elections and the rule of law. And you guys voted against it or didn't vote. Cowards. And let me read. Can I read the names one more time? Here were the people that voted. Once again, they voted to not condemn attacks on our democracy. Backer and Barr and Drozdowski, they voted to unequivocally condemn violence. They voted against unequivocally condemning violence directed at the state capitals and the U.S. capitals. They voted against condemning violence against our democracy in Green and in Grossel and in Heinrich. They basically voted against holding the terrorist traitors accountable in Mortensen and Mecklen. They voted against the will of the Minnesota voters, and they voted again, or they didn't even show up to let their opinion be known when it comes to committing to democracy, free and fair elections, and the rule of law. The same Republicans who are the party of law and order, here they are, basically have a chance to say, we support the rule of law. And once again, the following 14 said, I don't want it. A cop died. I don't care. I don't want my voters mad at me. Albright, Bo, Erickson, Franson, Gruenhagen, Kosnick, Lucero, McDonnell, Miller, Mueller, Munson, Nash, Quam, Scott. You've heard of a baker's dozen is 13. How about a coward's dozen being 14? Because you're all... Albright's a coward. Bo's a coward. Erickson's a coward. Franson's a massive coward. Gruenhagen, my God, coward. Kosnick, Lucero, McDonald, coward, coward, coward. Miller, Mueller, Munson, Nash, Quam, Scott, all of them cowards. God bless the United States of America. Arrest the traitors and save democracy. Amen. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. By the way, that story in Blue Stem Prairie. We'll take a break. Come on back. I'll get back to Jennifer Carnahan. We'll get the Minnesota coronavirus update as well. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. The I want to as well. Once again, let's just recap so far what we've gotten from the Republicans today. The president of the United States, the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, sends an angry mob to kill them all. And they are like, that's not a crime. When was that a crime? Don't make us find our spines in front of them. Don't. On top of that, the law and order, air quotes, law and order Minnesota Republican Party decided to vote against law and order yesterday. At least 8 of them did. 14 of them were such cowards they basically hid. They didn't vote at all. They also didn't have the opportunity to once again stand up for police officers as a cop was killed. But I guess a cop killed by a right-wing mob is okay for them? I don't know. I'm asking the question. It's a question to ask because they didn't condemn that either. They just basically were cowards. But this delusion, this level of delusion where they basically these people wake up every day. And Governor Walz could run into a burning building and save a puppy and come on out. And the first thing out of most of these Republicans' mouths was, why did you save the puppy? One extra puppy. Why would you do that? And that because they cannot, they are now so brainwashed, they don't even think about what they're saying. They just think of the condemnation and the taunting they can do of the other side. Case in point, and a little background information, in case you missed the story, the Minnesota Republican Party, namely the Senate caucus, likely killed one of their own members with coronavirus. Right after the election, even though we are in a pandemic, and the pandemic was really starting to rage at that point, Republicans who had managed to hold on to the Minnesota Senate decided it was time to party hardy. Let's party! Woo! So they went out to some place in Lake Elmo and had a party where even though the venue offered masks and this, these people did not wear their masks. They kept them off. They weren't socially distancing. They were having a huff. They were rubbing it on in. Got those libs. Get them. What they also got, many of them, was coronavirus because there was an outbreak at that event. And including Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, got coronavirus. Also, sadly, did Jerry Ralph, the senator from St. Cloud, who died. It is very likely that the Minnesota Republican Party, because of their ignorance and intentional stupidity, killed one of their own members. You would think something like that would have a consequence, would make a person to step back and say, whoa, boy, we can't be that dumb again. Well, wait a second. Don't underestimate the Republican Party. And it's time for us to turn to Jennifer Carnahan, the Grand Canyon. That's right. Jennifer Carnahan. If you don't remember, Jennifer Carnahan wanted everyone at the Grand Canyon gift shop to drop everything and give her a private tour. It's a way to do it. We're going to get the private tours because she's the wife of a congressman. Well, apparently the park staff said, no, we can't do that. No, she did go in on her own. That's fine. But the mere request, come on. Oh, she's here. Oh, drop everything. It doesn't matter. We have to give a wife of a congressman a tour. Anywho, that's why I call her Grand Canyon because, yeah, that kind of gives you a good grasp here. Well, she's behind another doozy of one, and I've got some serious personal questions to ask Jennifer Carnahan here when we get done with the story. The Minnesota GOP is once again under scrutiny for holding party events without observing COVID-19 face masks and social distancing recommendations. Pictures shared in an email newsletter from the Minnesota Republican Party chair, Jennifer Carnahan, show a large group of party members gathered at a weekend retreat in Deadwood, South Dakota. Hey, by the way, couldn't go to a Minnesota resort, you know, buy local? You couldn't go to a Minnesota resort, could you? I mean, there's tons of resorts here that could definitely use some extra business, Jennifer. Why didn't you go to some place in Minnesota? Why are you going to a neighboring state and spending Minnesota GOP dollars in South Dakota when you have – and trust me, there's plenty of these organizations that are run by far-right Republicans. You could have easily found a Republican convention center that you could have run easily. So why are you taking Minnesota GOP dollars out of the state of Minnesota, Jennifer, and giving it to South Dakota? I guess you just don't care about the local business. Anyway, we'll move past that. Anyway, they had a large group of party members gather for a weekend retreat in Deadwood, South Dakota. None of them were wearing face masks or observing distancing advice. As a matter of fact, if you see the pictures, which I'll post a little bit later on, yeah, they were clearly – they didn't care. Unlike Minnesota, South Dakota, run by complete and total morons – I added that line in there because those people over there are complete and total morons – has no statewide business restrictions in place, nor does it have any face mask mandates, but mask wearing and mitigation efforts such as limiting close contact have been cited by health experts and scientists the world over as crucial for preventing the spread of the virus. You know, something they probably should have done back in November when they had their party, which it likely ended in the death of Jerry Ralph. It comes a little over 2 months after Senate Republicans were criticized for hosting that party, and it comes out a little after a year after which some Republicans have downed the year of the downplaying of the severity of the pandemic, refused to wear a mask inside the state capitol, opposed business restriction measures designed to prevent the virus spread. One of the most prominent opponents of COVID restrictions is South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, who has consistently ignored masking advice during campaign visits and touted her hands-off approach to the virus. Carnahan's report about Deadwood retreat is titled "A Free State," and she noted, if only Governor Walz would take a page out of Governor Noem's playbook. Okay. So the first thing I want to point out here is the Minnesota GOP is deciding to spend their money in South Dakota, not at a needy resort or complex here in Minnesota. The second thing is this. You do realize that South Dakota, for an extended period of time, was the worst place on the planet for coronavirus. You do realize that, right? That nowhere else on the planet, no, you know, blank hole countries as Trump used to refer to them, no third world countries, no emerging countries, no inner city rooms, no, South Dakota was the most god-awful place on the planet with coronavirus. Not something you necessarily would say, isn't this great? And let me give another example of this. Say South Dakota had a massive outbreak of herpes, okay? You know, follow me here. Say that the entire state of South Dakota was just covered in herpes, all right? And as a matter of... what has Rushmore been up to lately? I mean, I just got asked the question. So... South Dakota is covered in herpes. This is a hypothetical. So South Dakota is covered in herpes. And as a matter of fact, the World Health Organization comes on out and says, holy God, for 3 weeks, the worst place on the planet for herpes is South Dakota. I think Jennifer Carnahan would be over there touching everything, maybe even licking things, and saying, I wish our state was more free like South Dakota. Why can't Governor Walz get more herpes here in Minnesota? Come on, more herpes. Come on, Governor Walz. Can't we be the herpes capital of the world? Of course she wouldn't do this, because that's insanity. But yet here's Jennifer Carnahan saying it was the worst for coronavirus. And she's like, isn't that the greatest thing ever? So now you have two things here, which are not the main problem I have with this. I'll get to that in a second. But once again, they decide to go to South Dakota. The Minnesota GOP has a retreat, and they don't spend their money at any Minnesota resorts or complexes. They spend their money in South Dakota. Second of all, she praises South Dakota, which once again was the worst place on the planet for coronavirus, and says, why can't Governor Walz be more like South Dakota, which was the worst place on the planet for coronavirus? Which is like saying, why can't Governor Walz be you know, like more like this place, which is the worst place on the planet for herpes. But that's not the real problem here. If you look at the pictures, the pictures of, you know, and I should mention South Dakota Lieutenant Governor Gary Roden and State Auditor Rich Sackgast, among the guest speakers of the retreat, among the Minnesota lawmakers to attend were Senator Paul Utke from Park Rapids, who was one of the 8 senators sworn in earlier this month while not wearing face mask, and Representative Greg Bow of Chaska. Hey, that's the second time we've had Bow show up. Bow, he showed up. He was one of those super cowards that did not go on out there and even vote to condemn the violence at the state capitol. But there he is out there without a mask. But I want to focus on Jennifer Carnahan. Because, Jen, I'm going to read off the Wikipedia page for your husband, who is Congressman Jim Hagedorn. This is personal life on Wikipedia. And once again, it's Wikipedia, so... Hagedorn is married to Jennifer Carnahan, the chairman of the Republican Party of Minnesota, and they reside in Blue Earth, Minnesota. I'm not sure about that. Anyway, but he was diagnosed with stage 4 kidney cancer in 2019. Hagedorn received immunotherapy to treat the cancer in December of 2020. So a month ago, he underwent surgery to remove the diseased kidney. Okay. Now, I'm going to ask a question, and it might seem like a harsh question, but it's a legit question considering Jennifer Carnahan's actions and her husband's condition and the fact the Republican Party likely already killed one of their caucus members with coronavirus. Jennifer, are you not happy in your marriage for some reason? Because if you were happy in your marriage, why in the heck would you be jeopardizing Congressman Hagedorn's health and life by going out to freaking South Dakota for what appears to be a stunt where you're trying desperately to own the libs and own Governor Walz? Because it seems to me, now I don't know about you, if any of the listeners out here, but if you're like myself, I have friends. I have one friend who's been going through cancer. I have other friends who have kids who have health conditions, who have other, you know, have a spouse with a health condition, have an elderly parent with a health condition, and the way that they react to anyone coming to the door or trying to go out in public is incredible. You know, they you know, you want to be very careful with this. You do not want a loved one who is in jeopardy of dying because not only is coronavirus serious, but they have underlying health conditions. You want to be very careful. I even have, once again, that friend that's got cancer. You go to their door, you try to drop something off, and they will wipe down the door, even if you don't touch it, before they come in and go out because they're that concerned about anything getting in the house. That's called, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a hassle. In a perfect world, we don't have coronavirus. We're not having to deal with this. But that's called love. That's called compassion. That's called caring for your loved ones, where you make an effort to not get them sick by, I don't know, going out in a pathetic attempt to do a publicity stunt for political reasons and potentially bringing coronavirus home to a congressman who a month ago was having surgery to remove a kidney. And don't tell me he's doing great. He's down a kidney. He's gone through cancer. For God's sakes, I'm not saying, Jennifer Carnahan, you are the Minnesota GOP chair. I understand you have to be around. But my God, why are you getting around other people without masks on? Don't you realize you could kill your husband by doing this? How is it I am more concerned about your husband's health and well-being than you are, Jen? How? How is that even possible? Seriously, how is that even possible? I have called Jim Hagedorn the bag of soup. I mean, it's not a term of endearment. I am not a fan of his. But I don't want to see him dead, for God's sakes. And part of that would mean if I was going to have him come, say I had an opportunity to go interview him, I would be making sure I was socially distanced. I was wearing a face mask. I'd wash my hands. I would, you know, I would be clearly trying to stay away from him. I wouldn't be going out and running down the gang initiation of high fives before I rolled around in South Dakota, which was once, again, the worst place on the planet for coronavirus for an extended period of time last year, and then come home, honey, I'm home. Sweet Lord, are you crazy? Are you happy in your marriage? What's going on here? How is it you can be this lackluster and this bone stupid when it comes to your own husband, a sitting U.S. congressman, by the way, and the chances of you contaminating him and making him sick? God, just how stupid are you? I mean, I don't know. Are you not living together right now? I mean, I'm asking this as a legitimate question. I mean, is it a case where, you know, he's staying someplace else and you're staying someplace else, so there's no chance of you cross-contaminating him? Is that what's going on? Because I think if I had a loved one who was in jeopardy of dying because they get coronavirus, the last thing I was going to do if I knew I was going to be home with them later on that evening would be go on out there and hang around a bunch of people without a face mask and not socially distancing. Because that seems like it'd be really, really, really stupid. But hey, you got a zinger in on Tim Walz. Ho, ho, ho! May God, I pray to God that the cost of that zinger is not your own husband's death through the coronavirus. For God's sakes, grow up, Jennifer. Have some responsibility. And could you please show the same level of empathy and care for your husband that I seem to show? For God's sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Love that ad. 952-946-6205, Matt McNeil Show. I've actually had multiple people saying, hey, Jennifer, you like South Dakota so much, I'm sure you can find a place over there to move to. Knock yourself out. You don't spend Minnesota GOP dollars here in Minnesota. You spend it over in South Dakota, even though the Minnesota economy sure could use it. You basically then go on out there and say, the worst place on the planet for coronavirus is something that this state should try to emulate. And then you seem to show absolutely zero concern for your husband, who is recovering from kidney surgery that he had last month. And he's a cancer survivor, by going out to South Dakota, not wearing a mask and not socially distant. I don't get it. The coronavirus update for today includes 8 new deaths and 727 new cases. The newly reported deaths bring the state total to 6,106 over the course of the pandemic. Of those deaths, 63% were long-term care facility, including one of the 8 reported on Tuesday. But once again, that means 7 of the 8 were not. And once again, I don't like that. I mean, they all write it that way. So, you know, in my mind, it's like don't try to downplay the seriousness and the sadness of the death by saying, well, they were in a long-term care facility. Well, still is someone who died from a disease that if we had a leadership that took it seriously, they probably wouldn't be dead. Through January 24th, the state reported that 284,441 people have been received at least one dose of the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, while 67,567 people have completed both doses. 2 new variants of the coronavirus have been confirmed in Minnesota, including the first known case of Brazilian variant in the United States. The case involves a Minnesota who recently traveled to Brazil. Statewide, there were 163 staffed ICU beds available during the November surge. The state had fewer than 100 staffed ICU beds available. The number of available beds is dependent on the number of staff available, so the totals are constantly changing. The 727 positive results on Tuesday update were from a total of 10,929 completed tests, creating a daily test positivity rate of 6.65. According to Johns Hopkins University of Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days has been 4.48, making it one of the lowest rates in the country. But why are we like this? Come on, Tim Walz. Can't we be like South Dakota? You know, can you imagine what the state would have done if we didn't have a political party, the Republicans, constantly fighting the common sense, scientific, medical advice putting out there? But they'll all claim, guarantee you, every Republican will claim, oh, yeah, well, we did everything impossible. We were due diligent. Thank God we got through this. They won't talk about the fact that this was is by far the worst country on the planet for coronavirus. By far, we didn't have the vaccines that Donald Trump said we were going to have. We also, it should be mentioned, didn't have any vaccine distribution plan because Donald Trump was lying the entire time. But yet, it's sad. I tell you what, when we do come back after the top of the hour break here, I want to talk about the Brazilian guy. Because I do have a question about this. I can't believe he would be forced to travel for business to Brazil. I can't believe that would be the case. That I think that he would have, it sounds like he probably went down there probably for a vacation. I don't know. It could have, I guess, been a family member, urgency, something like that. But needless to say, I want to ask that question because how much privacy, if someone goes on a vacation and brings back a serious disease, how much privacy does that person deserve? It's the Matt McNeil Show, Hour 2 up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Brett Johnson, Patrick here as well. Brett, I got to ask you a question because I mentioned this at the end of last hour. We got our first Brazilian version of coronavirus. I don't know how you wax it, but needless to say, we got our first version. The easy joke. The easy joke.
All on the
tee. Oh, yeah. So, let's make sure we get his mic turned on there. There we go. The question I have is this. So it's not likely this guy flew for business reasons.
No,
it would be an awkward trip to Brazil even if we weren't under quarantine. But now, no, you wouldn't. You just do it over Zoom call. You do it over FaceTime, however you do it. So the two options are, one, this guy was trying to go back for a family member or something like that, or this person was trying to sneak in a vacation to Brazil during a pandemic. And Brazil, the guy that's running that country, he's kind of the South Dakota of South America. It's really kind of stupid how, everything needs to be open again, and they've had big problems down there, especially with this Brazilian strain, which is – and I'm going to list the things here, okay? It was first discovered in Brazil as far back as last July. It is now confirmed in Minnesota, Peru, Germany, South Korea, and Japan. Oh, lucky us. Its spike protein mutation helps it better attach to cells, meaning it's likely more transmissible. It might be capable of reinfecting people who previously had the original strain. Things that the health officials do not know about the Brazilian version, though. There is no evidence to this point that suggests it's deadlier. There's no evidence at this point to suggest it causes more severe illness. And no hard evidence at this point to say that vaccines won't work on it. So, more contagious. But still, the last thing I think we need to do is, making things worse with this. If it is discovered this individual went down to Brazil on a vacation, that we have the Brazilian strain in this country now because of petty selfishness. What do you think about outing the individual's name, letting the public know that this person decided a vacation during a pandemic was a good idea, and now they've brought back the Brazilian version of coronavirus?
I'd go even a step further. No matter if he's on vacation or not, or whoever this is, I would say name them. This is pretty serious, as you brought up. A lot of these effects on there, especially the reinfection, that is terrifying. If you can have people get this multiple times because of this strain, I know that sounds extreme to say, oh, we're going to out this guy. But, I mean, if you're taking a vacation, which is the most egregious, or even if you're on a business trip, I don't even think that's necessarily an excuse. I mean, what business are you working for where you truly need to be like, in Brazil?
I mean, they sell waxes up here. I'm just going to let you know. You don't have to go all that way. I understand why healthcare professionals do not want to necessarily out this person because of their health elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to a point, I mean, I just spent the last half hour ripping on Jennifer Carnahan because she purposely showed, look at us, we're being stupid, and I have no feeling of problem of saying, okay, look, they're being stupid. But when you get someone like this, if it's discovered, like I said, we don't know what the reason was. Could be work, could be a personal family matter, could have been a vacation. If you find out it is a vacation, I can understand the uncomfortableness of the healthcare professionals, but I think the state should just say, you know, it's this person, and it's more contagious. If you had any contact with them, let them know. And it's a shame. I know that person will say, like, well, that's not fair. No, what's not fair is you traveling to someplace where there's an even more vicious strain of this disease. And once again, we are now with Peru, Germany, South Korea, and Japan. Minnesota is the only other places outside of Brazil that has this, thanks to you. So, I mean, if there was – it was a personal thing. I mean, look how Hawaii cracked down on all these people that went out there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I'm more curious, too, how he even got back into the United States while being infected. There's definitely some loopholes, I think, in the way we travel right now. That's even going back to early 2020 where we just had just a flood of people coming in infected. And, of course, we just packed them all in airports. But – even in this scenario, too, it's very concerning that this guy was able to get back to the United States with this very, very dangerous strain.
Well, and reminder, too, that Trump, when he was putting up these restrictions, oh, we stopped all the flights from China. Well, outside of 200,000 people who flew here from China during your so-called shutdown. You and I talked about this back in February. I think it's January. I think January of last year, you said this is going to be everywhere. It's going to be everywhere. You didn't shut it down. You didn't shut down. You have to shut everything down completely. And you know, and the problem is that you get these people. It's like the storming of the U.S. Capitol. These people, if they couldn't get on flights, someone was bankrolling them because they jumped on private jets and flew over there. You can't stop. I guess you can't stop that to a point, but. I mean, I think that if it's discovered that this person just wanted to go down and party on the beaches of Rio, I think you got a smackdown on him.
Party for sure. Yeah, if he's just down there for a vacation. Yeah. Maybe if he's visiting like a sick family member, that would be one small exception to grant. But for the most part, you got to name this guy. That is so irresponsible what he did.
It is a Tuesday. That means we've got an interview coming up, correct?
That is correct. We got Patrick Koulikan of the Minnesota Reformer. We spend the bulk of our time talking about the budget from Governor Tim Walz, as well as his new education policy, which does a lot of really good things that Patrick can highlight since he's been writing about that even long before he was with the Reformer. So lots of good stuff today in our chat with Patrick.
All right. Patrick Koulikan, the Minnesota Reformer, with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
All right. Thank you for that very kind introduction, Matt, as we are now ready for our Tuesday interview with Patrick Koulikan of the Minnesota Reformer, a great resource to follow along with what's happening in the Minnesota political world over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here, as always.
Absolutely. So a lot of big news to get to today, and I want to start off with Governor Walz laying out his new budget proposal for the current cycle. It's a $52 billion budget that calls for a number of proposals, including a new tax bracket for people making over $1 million, higher corporate taxes, additional taxes on cigarettes, a bump in general education funding, and also more aid to businesses hit by COVID-19 disruption. So, as expected, Republicans not exactly on board with Governor Tim Walz's proposal, but anything that you saw reading through what he's proposing right now that surprised you in his budget?
Not necessarily. I think that given divided government with the Senate controlled by Republicans, we have to view this document as really a policy blueprint. It's what he might want to do. It's also a political document because this is the final 2-year budget he'll propose before going into his reelection. So I think he wants to tell Minnesotans what his priorities are and how he would pay for them. And so, as you said, he would do so in a more progressive manner by introducing that fifth tax bracket on earnings on the income of $1 million or more, as well as capital gains, dividends, and increasing the corporate franchise tax. And then he wants to spend the money on education, and then also they've called this the pandemic recovery budget. So they're trying to help small businesses and lower-income people who've been hit the hardest by this. So the question of what's actually going to become law, I think that it's unlikely that a lot of this will become law, but it's an important statement of values. And really sends a signal to Minnesotans about who this governor is and where he wants to take the state.
Yeah, exactly. You get these every 2 years from whoever's in the governor mansion, and you said, yeah, generally gives you an idea of what their ideas are, but whether those get enacted into policy largely depends on the makeup of the legislature. And as you said, with Republicans in control of the Senate, there will probably be some changes, but definitely is a starting point. Another big proposal from Governor Tim Walz is his new education plan called Due North. Now, you, of course, Patrick, have been following this education issue for a while now at some other media outlets, and you were thinking that this was probably going to come to a head eventually, ever since Governor Tim Walz began his gubernatorial campaign back in 2018 and made education and closing that achievement gap a big part of his campaign. And this is certainly a big part of his proposal right now, this Due North education proposal, which one of the things that caught my attention is the creation of an Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Center at the Minnesota Department of Education. They have also are going to be emphasizing teaching the accurate history of Minnesota's indigenous people and trying to recruit more teachers of color. So this is a big, ambitious proposal from Governor Tim Walz. And like I said, you follow this issue for a while, and it probably was eventually going to come to a head here at the state legislature.
Right. He, of course, has a background as an educator. He spent a decade as a high school geography teacher, a celebrated teacher in West Mankato, where he's also a football coach. His wife is an educator. He spent time before they moved to Minnesota in Nebraska. He was also a teacher. So they're very passionate about it. They're knowledgeable about it. And, of course, it's probably, in my estimation, it's Minnesota's greatest challenge. Is we have our state is changing, becoming more diverse, and we're not doing a very good job teaching and providing opportunities for kids who are Black, Indigenous, and kids of color from communities of color. And if we don't fix that issue and improve the opportunities for those children, it's going to be bad for our economy in the long run, because that's where the growth in our population is. And so that's a problem that needs fixing. The interesting political challenge for Walz on this is that his closest ally is the teachers union. And they were an important endorsement to him when he was in the middle of a primary fight with Aaron Murphy, and their endorsement was important. And they continue to be important supporters. So that means that he doesn't necessarily always have great flexibility, because it's important that he keep his closest ally close. And so I think that was reflected to a degree when he rolls out the plan, and the president of the teachers union was with him. They were very pleased that Alan Page, former Supreme Court Justice Alan Page, was also there. He's backing a constitutional amendment that would guarantee education, and the teachers union was very much opposed to that. So to have the union and Alan Page together in support of the plan, I think was considered a big achievement. The plan itself focuses, I think you mentioned some of the highlights. I think the most significant ones are probably recruiting teachers from communities of color. That's been a huge failing of our system. And there's pretty good evidence to show that that Black and Indigenous students do better when there's Black and Indigenous teachers in the classroom, and also a focus on culturally appropriate teaching, so that which I think is also shown to have some success. You know, as I think I pointed out this morning in my newsletter, there's a lot of sort of educator lingo in the 2-page document they sent out. It's the way that education bureaucrats talk. It's not necessarily the way that average people talk, and it's certainly not the way that Republican legislators talk. And I think that if you're trying to win, get some Republican support, which they're going to need, because there is a Republican Senate, I think that they're probably going to have to make some compromises, as you would expect.
Yeah, and one of the things you also noticed in this 2-page document that was released with Governor Walz is at least his overview of the education plan is that, as you said, there are some buzzwords in there that don't exactly thrill Republicans, but they also didn't mention math or reading at all in that document, which I know some people might roll their eyes and say, eh. But that's an important thing to try to get people on board to make sure you're emphasizing those fundamentals. So politically, that could be something that Walz will need to look at as well to try to sell this plan and get some Republicans in the Senate on board.
Right. I mean, you're not trying to sell this plan to the education policy wonks at the Department of Education or at the teachers union. You're trying to get everyday Minnesotans and Republican lawmakers on board. And, you know, from their vantage point, I think the biggest problem is that, you know, fourth and eighth grade kids don't have aren't proficient in reading and math. And we need to figure out how to improve that. And, you know, I think for my money, I would have liked to see a little bit more nuts and bolts about that.
Well, his proposal, Governor Walz, is certainly going to stand in opposition to what Republicans want, as we've already seen ideas floated from Republicans like Roger Chamberlain pushing for more tax credits, even for religious schools. So diametrically, both of these sides are on exact opposite sides on this issue right now.
Yeah, and that's a non-starter. That's not going to happen. The Walz, you know, again, he's a public school teacher. Mm-hmm. The idea of that's essentially a private school voucher program, and he's just simply not going to allow that foot in the door that they fear would lead to money being taken from the public school system and being diverted to private schools. It's just it's not going to happen. It was proposed in 2019, Walz's first budget. The Senate passed it, and it was one of those, it was just a deal killer, apparently, in negotiations. Walz just told them that's just it's not going to happen, so take it off the table, and obviously they did, and we'll see the same thing this year, but it'll be something for negotiation.
And one more thing regarding education that I noticed is that there's also a proposal for more money for schools to offset a recent drop in student enrollment during the COVID-19 pandemic. I've been following this, too, where I know there's a number of private schools in town that have seen a spike in enrollment, while public schools have seen a drop in enrollment. So Walz is trying to propose some money to help schools with some of these offset with some of these different enrollment numbers. It strikes me as being kind of an interesting issue here, because if I look at some Republicans who might represent a district that just lost a whole bunch of students due to COVID-19, I wonder if they could possibly come on board with that, being that their local districts are certainly going to be in need of money.
There might be some support among suburban Republicans. Although I fear that the Republican base in greater Minnesota, they kept their schools open. I mean, we can argue about whether or not that was a good idea. And so they've had lower enrollment losses. And the districts with the biggest enrollment losses have been in the metro. And as you were pointing out, that they will lose money because they get paid on a per pupil basis. So with lower enrollment, less money, and the enrollment loss has been even greater than they actually thought they were going to have last year. And so some of these districts are really going to be hurting. and Walz is trying to fill that gap. I think the Republican response is probably going to be, well, you know what, they should have kept their schools open for in-person instruction, and they wouldn't have lost so many students to private schools and to homeschooling.
We're speaking with Patrick Coulican, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com. So one of your writers, Logan Carroll, wrote something on this Facebook page called the Twin Cities Crime Watch. Now, if you're on Facebook, you've probably seen this page pop up on your feed every once in a while where it's not really an official governmental or even media page, but it's basically just people following police scanner traffic and then posting it on this page, Twin Cities Crime Watch. Now, unfortunately, not all the information posted to that page is necessarily accurate, and there are some accusations and even some data showing that it actually is overemphasizing the number of people of color who get in trouble with the law. But as I think you could attest to, Patrick, there are a lot of people in town, whether it's members of the media or even politicians, that probably look at this Minneapolis Crime Watch and information page and kind of use that as a perception that there are a lot, that there is a lot of crime in Minneapolis. And I'm glad you guys did this write up on this showing that, well, not all this information is necessarily true on this Facebook page. And there definitely seems to be some racial bias as well.
Yeah, these are popular Facebook pages where they have a team of anonymous people. I mean, this is one of the first problems. There's no accountability. So they're anonymous people who listen to police scanners, and they put scanner traffic onto these Facebook pages. And there's really no regard to accuracy, because when you hear what's happening on a police scanner, it's all often very incomplete, sketchy information. And they make no effort to correct information later. Logan's piece leads with this incident where, you know, if you listen to the scanner traffic, there's some mob of men who are terrorizing one single guy, and then it just turned out to be completely incorrect. But they don't have any regard to accuracy. They don't go back and fix it. And then the other thing is, they seem to be driving some kind of an agenda. The agenda is that the idea that, first of all, crime is like completely out of control in the Twin Cities. And yeah, sure, there's crime, and it was a spike in crime this summer and fall. But generally speaking, if you look at crime rates in, you know, in the teens, until this recent spike, they were historically low, and the Twin Cities is safer than other large metro areas. So that's one sort of agenda they seem to push. And then the other thing is they seem to be more interested in Black and Somali suspects than white suspects. And if you actually, Logan, in this case, he did a statistical analysis. He looked at 5 months of their posts, and sure enough, if you compare the actual number of suspects versus those that they are reporting, they seem to over-report when it comes to Black and Somali and East African suspects. So, it was really a good piece that I think shed some light on a very popular alternative media universe. And, you and I have talked about this. We're trying to pierce some of that misinformation and disinformation that has really kind of swallowed our information atmosphere.
Most definitely. And we are running a little short on time. So if you want to follow along with what's happening with the Minneapolis Crime Watch page and Logan's article, it's over at the MinnesotaReformer.com. MinnesotaReformer.com. Really encourage you to check that out. And last thing I want to cover with you here, Patrick, is something you guys broke last week. And that is, well, Mike Lindell, owner of MyPillow and potential gubernatorial candidate in 2022. You guys looked into some records regarding Mike Lindell, and it looks like there are some situations regarding domestic violence with Mike Lindell that could definitely complicate his political future and, well, overall kind of show that he's certainly not the best guy in the world. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, so he's pretty open about his past as a cocaine and alcohol and crack addict, and this kind of crazy lifestyle he led for a long time before he got sober and found Jesus. But he's not been so open about some of his tumultuous relationships with two women in particular. An ex-girlfriend, unfortunately she's now deceased, but she reported that he kicked her so hard in the back that she broke a rib. Lindell claims that these allegations are not true, but you can find this stuff in police reports and court documents, including an order of protection that was granted against Lindell. She later had it rescinded, but it's pretty graphic allegations. And then also in an affidavit in his divorce, where his second wife accused him of abuse as well. He denied it. He threatened to sue us in a voicemail. These are interesting documents that we unearthed, and we'll be interested to see if the national media follows up and if this plays into his potential run for governor in 2022.
Well, Mike Lindell threatening people with a lawsuit definitely sounds like par for the course for him. Hey, that's been Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, look forward to chatting with you again next week.
Okay, great to be here. Thank you.
We'll take a break and turn things back over to Matt up next on AM 950.
The Progressive Voice of Minnesota's Matt McNeil Show. Thanks, Patrick Houlihan from the Minnesota Reformer, for joining us. If you're not following the Minnesota Reformer, you are wrong. It is a sensational news outlet. As a matter of fact, I got a story from them myself coming up here in just a moment to talk about. But really quick, I did want to make sure I mention we do have the pretty calendar. Still a few of them left. We've actually sold a lot of these through the membership program at AM 950 Radio. It is the story here is this, is that once everything shut down, my family and I started going into parks. If I can really quick diverge from this for a quick second, I actually have had multiple people ask me the question, why am I not walking more, posting more photos lately about being out in the parks? I'm not sure if you're aware of this. It is winter. All right. And that would be all the snow out there. When I started the walking in the parks thing, that was in March. Of late March of last year, and most of the parks were good, although we did get a little snow in every once in a while. For the most part, a lot of the walk – I'm still walking. Like today, I hiked down Main Street. I got together for a cup of coffee with a friend, and we hiked from Shady Oak Road on Main Street in Hopkins over to, what was it, 10th or something like that and back. So I'm getting out and walking. It's just most of the stuff is, you know, not exactly photogenic. I guess I could take a picture of the parking lot with the dumpster. But, you know, I'm going to pass on that. I'll get back out into the wild and I'll take more pictures. And I've got a lot of great suggestions, by the way, of parks that I missed this last year that people want me to go back out into. I will follow up on that. So thank you very much for all the suggestions. But that's why, I mean, I'm posting some. I went out to Theo Worth. I got some photos from I was over at Lake of the Isles. And I took some photos out there. I'll get those posted before too much longer. But you can see the photos from last year, while it tides you over with your photo appetite, in the calendar. And once again, just it's something I really enjoy doing. A lot of these pictures are taken. You'll find out, like in April here, I got this beautiful picture of a pretty little purple flower. I took this out at Tierney Woods out in Bloomington, which is that 494 and 169. It's right on southeast side of that intersection, and it's down there. It's a little park that you wouldn't know. Stone Arch Bridge, that's an easy one for you to find. Carver Park Preserve, which, by the way, you got to get out there in the summer. That is as good as it gets. Very pretty there. The Lindale Park Gardens over off of Lake Harriet. Very nice. So you know, there's tons of pictures you can find out there, and you'll enjoy this. And here's the best part. By getting the calendar, you're helping the station out. So go to the membership tab. If you haven't already, go to the membership tab, make a one-time $50 donation, or become a recurring supporting member of AM 950 for $25 a month. We'll get you the calendar, and thank you very much. You're helping to keep Progressive Radio on the air in Minneapolis, St. Paul, as we head into 2021. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Governor Tim Walz proposed a $52.4 billion state budget. Of course, you heard Patrick Houlihan talk about this with Brett here. But looking at some of these, he's basically saying we can't just there's two things we're not going to do. We can't just spend, you know, make a massive budget deficit and keep doing this. And we can't just expect the middle and lower class to have their taxes raised and pay for things. And I want to make sure we step back for a quick second here and acknowledge for 40 years, conservatives in this country have been handing as much money as they can to the wealthiest people, handing it back. They'll go into a budget cycle. The first thing they'll do is give every millionaire and billionaire all their tax dollars back. And then they'll try to say, now we're going to start balancing the budget. And you say, no, 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 no. You started balancing the budget the second you gave the millionaires and billionaires all their tax revenue back. You yourself created a massive crater in the budget, which once again, for 40 years, Republicans have demanded the middle and lower class pay for the lifestyles of the wealthy. And, you know, frankly, I don't know about you guys, but as I'm middle class, I'm getting damn tired of paying for some billionaire's great, 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 great grandkid to sit on some tropical beach and drink Cristal. I'm tired of it. And that's all we're doing. The 10 wealthiest people on the planet in the last three quarters of last year alone made $540 billion. That is not a system which is working. And I'll be damned if we should have the middle and lower class keep paying for these tax breaks for the wealthy. So the governor is coming out and doing what a decent human being will do. And he's saying that we're going to have to raise taxes. $52.4 billion state budget Tuesday would raise the taxes on the wealthiest Minnesotans, corporations, and tobacco products while trying to ease the pandemic's burden on students. Walls, his proposals include extensive tax increases to support his spending and tax break plans. Walls proposed creating a fifth-tier income tax rate for married couples making more than $1 million a year or a single earning netting $500,000 or more per year. He estimated 21,000 households would see their taxes increase by about $8,000 on average. But it's $8,000 on a household that's making $1 million that year. He wants to raise the tax on a pack of cigarettes. I have no problem with that. I don't. I really don't. Cigarette tax is currently at $3.04 a pack. He basically would create new gross receipts tax on the retail sale of vape products. Are we still selling vape products? Office estimated the cigarette and vape taxes would raise a combined $151 million. His budget would increase the corporate franchise tax rate from 9.8% to 11.25% starting in tax year 2021. That jump is expected to funnel $424 million into the next two-year cycle. By the way, that is a tax rate that most of us would never even feel the impact of and will generate $424 million. By all means, do it. He proposed reinstating the lower estate tax exemption. Walls also wants an additional tax on capital gains and dividend income. Once again, dividend income and capital gains. That's not middle and lower class. That's wealthy people. And a reinstated push to tax repatriated foreign income. So basically people that are taking their money, stashing it overseas, like in the Canary Islands, and then trying to bring it back. Well, we tax that, so we actually tax it correctly. Then he'll use this to help pay for some of the spending proposals and the budget deficit issues. Republican legislative leaders oppose efforts on this. Senate Majority Leader and my favorite cast member from The Goonies, are you guys? Paul Gazelka said that they look for places to cut. Baby Ruth. He looks for places to cut and said in a statement Tuesday, we're not balancing budgets with tax increases. No, you're balancing the budget by cutting all the services for the middle and lower class, basically putting minorities out to get nothing, no help, no assistance whatsoever from the state government while you hand every tax dollar you can to millionaires and billionaires. And you know what? I'm damn tired of it. I am tired of these guys strapping their knee pads on every time a millionaire or a billionaire comes by because they're either looking for a donation for the next campaign or they're looking for the lobbying gig that they want to have after they're done. And the reality is that we need to start saying to ourselves, everyone pays their fair share. Not just the middle class, not just the lower class, but the wealthy in this state should pay their fair share. Julie is in Minneapolis. Welcome on in, Julie. Thanks for holding.
Hi, yeah. See, you know, I'm kind of disappointed. I wish the Democrats nationwide would talk more about what's really going on with tax cuts for the uber wealthy. Remember back in 2017 when there were tax cuts, and they were for the uber wealthy. I know my sister and her husband are upper income. They don't reach the bar of rich, but they never got a tax cut even though they're upper income. But anyway, they had the tax cuts for the corporations and the very, very rich. And then what happened is it was admitted that in 2021, the middle class and the working class would pay for the tax cuts $1.5 trillion.
Well, and Julie, if I can step on in here, I think the most important element of it is identifying what it was. It wasn't a tax break. The George W. Bush – and thanks, Julie. I appreciate your phone call. The George W. Bush tax cuts back in the 2000s were not a tax cut. They went and borrowed a bunch of money from China, threw it at the wealthy people, and then basically said, oh, the middle and lower class have to pay it back. That was a loan which we gave to wealthy people who already had money and then said to the people who don't have a lot of money, you need to pay for the wealthy people to get the money that we just gave them. The same exact thing basically happened here, only they didn't borrow it from the Chinese. They borrowed it from their own treasury. Back in 2017, Donald Trump did not give wealthy people a tax cut. He basically took a whole bunch of money out of the federal government, threw it at these people, started creating a massive budget deficit, and said, oh, if we haven't fixed this problem by 2021, the middle and lower class will have their taxes substantially raised to make sure that we pay for the wealthy people's tax cut. And you know what you don't see a Republican out there saying, geez, gosh, let's cut the middle class. When was the last time a Republican's only tax cut was middle and lower class? We're gonna pass the tax cut right now. It's a one-time tax cut for middle and lower class. We're going to cut their taxes. When was the last time you saw that? It doesn't happen. For God's sakes, I want to remind people of something that happened with the Republicans back when we had miners unemployed. We had an unemployment fund that when unemployment monies ran out, we could just tap into the fund and give that money to the unemployed. Well, we had the situation up on the Iron Range where people were running out of money. Well, we went to the fund, which once again was designed for this exact purpose. And 17 Republicans demanded tax cuts for the wealthy before we gave them the money that was already set aside for the unemployed. Before we could touch that money and give that money to them, we had to give another tax rate to millionaires and billionaires. I'm tired of it. Because the only people – they say we're going to give you a tax rate and they'll give you, what, $3 so you can get some Funyuns and some Yoo-Hoo, and that's all you get. And they'll say we're going to stop this. But every time they do, they basically – they don't give out tax cuts. What they do is they give out loans and then they expect the middle and lower class to pay for the wealthy people's extravagant lifestyles. And no, this is not creating jobs. It doesn't create more jobs. As a matter of fact, God, if it does, they suck at creating jobs right now. And no, it doesn't help our economy. A wealthy guy is not about to drink 10 more gallons of milk. When they are buying a yacht, it's on the international market, and they're stowing it over in France. That doesn't help us. No, this is almost all the money that we give to wealthy people in these tax cuts that the Republicans champion, almost all the money goes into long-term investment, which means not only is it not stimulating any kind of growth today, but any benefit of it doesn't emerge until decades down the road. If it all emerges at all, because that might be some guy sitting on a tropical beach in a foreign country drinking Cristal, some great-great-great-great-grandkid. So there might not be any benefit whatsoever. I'm tired of it. Millionaires and billionaires, they're not hurting. They're doing pretty damn good. And I am tired of us just building up deficit while we give tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires, and Republicans demand the middle and lower class pay back the wealthy people's tax breaks. Nope. That's an antiquated system, and it needs to end. By the way, I did want to make sure I mentioned one other thing here. This is from The Reformer. Kurt Dowd introduced legislation on Monday that would make it a misdemeanor to disseminate personal information about a police officer, such as a home address, personal email address, or photograph of an officer's home or car, if it could threaten his or her safety. Okay, wait a minute here. Why just police officers? Isn't this a good bill for all of us? As a matter of fact, that's a legit question. I read this. I said, okay, if this is the case, if someone is out there, you know, doxing someone, sending out their personal information, trying to intimidate them, trying to scare them, regardless if they're a cop or not, why not make that a crime? Oh, that's right. Because Republicans love that when it's going after their enemies. Go get them, guys. But now the same political party, which had a whole bunch of people just shrug their shoulders at the death of a cop, now they want to make it seem like they care. You can't have it both ways. You can't say personal information isn't important, but then when we say, well, why don't you save everyone else's personal information? Why don't you make this a crime if anyone does this for anyone else? Act as if, well, we need to put cops in another place. Well, a cop does not have to be a cop. No one is forced to be a cop. No one, if they don't like being a police officer, they can quit. Go find another job. Go to a different department. Go to a different state. But there's a lot of people that feel as if the reason why this is being introduced is because it comes months after St. Paul resident reported a police officer for getting into a truck with a 3%er sticker, a symbol of a far-right militia movement, and shared the image on social media. They're also upset because the Bob Kroll, the jackass former, soon-to-be-former, police union head, he basically, even though he wanted to be a public figure and be a public figure and do and lead policy initiatives and stuff like that, he didn't want anyone. He wanted to have some sort of anonymity, even though no one else got anonymity. For God's sakes, remember what the police are like every time they shoot a black man and they go on a character assassination sprint to destroy that person's family and everyone there. Is anyone ever caring about that personal information? Nope. So this is just a ploy by Kurt Dowd. And if I'm the Democrats in the House, add an amendment where you basically say we're going to make this illegal for anyone to do this and watch them pull the bill. Because you know what? If police don't deserve this, then no one deserves to have this information out there. But considering Republicans like to do that a lot, well, I guarantee the Republicans would pull back on that bill because this is just about politics for them. It's not about actual policy. 952-946-6205. The devil in Madison. When I do return, a good old Catholic exorcism. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Religious disclaimer, I am Catholic. You do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? Okay. A priest who live streamed exorcisms aimed at rooting out what he, former President Donald Trump, and some Trump supporters have falsely claimed was widespread voting fraud in the presidential election has left the Roman Catholic Diocese in Wisconsin. Okay, I didn't see that. Exorcism to prove Donald Trump right. I'm pretty sure if you want Donald Trump to be right, you want to leave the demon spirit in there. I'm just going to say, the Diocese of Madison said it and the Reverend John Zolsdorf reached a mutual decision on his departure. Zolsdorf will relocate from the diocese to pursue other opportunities, the diocese said in a statement earlier this month. The Bishop of Madison is grateful to Reverend Zolsdorf for his faithful support of the diocese, seminaries, and priest. Thanks him for many years of steadfast ministry serving the diocese and wishes him all the best in his future endeavors. And that was the statement they released. Zulsdorf did not immediately respond to a phone message and to email Tuesday seeking comment. Zulsdorf claimed he had permission from Madison Bishop Donald Hying to conduct the exorcisms. Hying said, however, he did not give Zulsdorf permission to conduct exorcism related to a partisan political activity, but rather approved of an exorcism for alleviation from the scourge of the coronavirus pandemic. Okay. You know, I'm no religious marketing expert. But if you're trying to claim your religion is more modern, more hip, more with it, cats, well, maybe you might want to pull back on the old exorcisms. I'm just saying. I would say that if you want to alleviation from the scourge of the coronavirus pandemic, wear a mask, wash hands, socially distance, avoid large groups. You know, don't dine in restaurants and stuff like that. Just get your food to go. By the way, make sure you get some food for tomorrow. Get the gift card. Help out. Maybe buy a t-shirt too. Help them out, okay? But I don't think you want to, you know, just kind of just do exorcisms all the time here. Recordings of Zulsdorf's exorcisms have been removed from YouTube, the Wisconsin State Journal reported. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops defines an exorcism as a specific form of prayer that the church uses against the power of the devil. Diocese spokesman Brent King described Zulsdorf's role in it as a freelancer, and he was not an employee of the diocese or the parish. So apparently he was pulling exorcisms on voting machines. Okay. You know, it's not like the movie. I mean, have you ever seen the movie The Exorcism? You ever see that one? It's a good film. Creepy. Max von Sydow. I can't even remember the name of the guy, the other priest. He's great in it. But it's, it is creepy. When she's walking up the stairs. Creepy. But you see, it's that non-realistic exorcism was basically to get a demon out of a human being, not an inanimate object. I don't know what's going on in Wisconsin, but you know, this is the second time you have that one clown down in the Archdiocese of La Crosse who was doing all the political stuff. Now you have this guy here. I don't know where all these priests have gotten, but if I may, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John feed the hungry, take care of the sick, give shelter to the homeless, welcome in strangers from strange lands. There's a lot of things that you can do there that are going to help out people, okay? Just going to let you know. That's kind of the way you want to go with it, all right? Exorcisms, Leviticus, yeah, you might want to avoid those, all right? Just a helpful hint. We're back with Stein on a Wednesday. Until then, see ya.